This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
I'm Philippe Cousteau from Earth Echo International, and you're listening to Out of the Blue, 855 AM, 3CR's Marine and Ocean News program.
Followed by oyster liqueurs. Good morning and welcome to Out of the Blue on Sunday, 25th of January 2026. You're listening to 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial, or you can have a listen from our website at www.3cr.org.au/radioblue, from where you can stream our broadcasts, and you will also find a number of previously aired episodes that have been uploaded as podcasts. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/outoftheblueradio. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that 3CR is broadcasting from and pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to future generations. My name's Andrew Christie from Melbourne Polytechnic and Marine Care Point Cook, and today's weather, we're looking at a partly cloudy top of 25 degrees, winds from the north to northwest at 15 to 20 kilometres an hour, shifting south to southwesterly, 20 to 30 kilometres an hour during the morning. You always got to be careful of those wind changes if you're out on the bay, and sort of a bit of a respite from yesterday's scorcher, but be on the lookout for the weather in the next couple of days, up to 30 tomorrow, and then on Tuesday, we're tipped to exceed 40 degrees, 42 or 43. I think they're saying it could climb as high as in some of the suburbs. So as always, please take care if you're getting into our beautiful bay or waterways in the state of Victoria, or indeed wherever you may be listening. Fantastic to be back in the studio after our summer break, and the topic of today's show basically around safety in the water. And one of the things that's been getting quite a bit of publicity recently has been jellyfish. So I want to enlighten our listeners on some of the finer points of jellies after this brief announcement.
Have a few children's picture books or footy boots that your kids have outgrown but want to find them a loving home? Well, drop them in at 3CR and put them in the books and boots bin. Books and Boots regularly sends pre-loved children's picture books and sports footwear to remote and regional First Nations communities and children across the country. Contact us at Books and Boots or go to the website www.booksandboots.org.au. We love a good book.
You're listening to Out of the Blue, 3CR Community Radio, 855 on your AM dial. One thing for those that I meant to mention before, that in case those of our listeners haven't stepped out looked around this morning, what you'll notice is it's very sort of smoky. There is a lot of smoke in the atmosphere. It's wafted over the suburbs, closed in around where I live in Point Cook. Last night at around 9 or 10 o'clock, it really started to get pretty thick and it's hung around. I think it's very still wind conditions at the moment, so presumably from some of the bushfires and things that are burning, various fires around the place, it's all the smoke is seemingly aggregated in this one big zone, so very, very smoky. So those of you with breathing conditions and asthma, just wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up on that this morning. Starting off the show with a very sad note, and this was one that really sort of rocked me to the core. Professor Emma Johnston, AO, was got the gig as Vice Chancellor of the University of Melbourne. That was back in February of 2025. And a lot of us in the marine science community were absolutely rapt when we heard that news, because Emma is someone who had a brilliant publication record. Sadly, she died of cancer at the age of 52 years. She was originally from Williamstown, was right into the marine ecology side of things and ecotoxicology, amongst other fields, a glittering publication record, something like over 150 odd publications, all in very sort of high impact journals. So this was a terrific researcher who was right at the very top of her game. And the other thing about Emma is she was a brilliant science communicator. And, you know, those sorts of things, being a communicator and a researcher, don't necessarily go hand in hand. Some are brilliant at the research, but leave a little bit to be desired with the communications. She had all that covered. And she was a brilliant person to boot. I mean, the closest I've come to her was sharing a taxi after a conference to the airport. And she was one of these people that you meet in your life where you know they're just the absolute salt of the earth, a wonderful person. And she will be very, very sorely missed. We've really lost an absolute gun in the industry. So commiserations to her family and friends, and also to her work colleagues. There'll be lots of them that are still really grieving, and I can tell from personal experience, you know, it's one of those things that happens, and it takes a long time to sink in. There's that total disbelief that someone like that is gone. Also, commiserations and condolences to the family of young Nico Antic, the 12-year-old who was bitten by a bull shark in Sydney, unfortunately lost his fight for life. I think it was yesterday the news broke. A few days ago, the family were saying it was looking very, very grim, and their worst fears came true, unfortunately. Clung to life for a week and then expired. So that's very, very sad news. That topic on sharks is one that'll never go away. It's always going to be hanging around in, basically if you've got summer in Australia, that means you're going to have shark interactions. You can pretty much mark it down. Some very interesting developments in that field that I want to talk about in future shows as well. Anyway, so that's a bit of a sad note to start off. Great to be back in the studio, but unfortunately we have to start off on such a sad note. But on to the rest of the show for today. You might have seen in the news there's been what we call smacks of jellyfish. Now, that's got to be one of the coolest collective nouns going around, a smack of jellyfish. I mean, I've always sort of thought of them as swarms of jellies, but no, the correct terminology is a smack. Smacks of jellyfish in Port Phillip Bay in the last few weeks. We've seen blue bottles coming in en masse. We've seen lion's mane jellies coming in, huge smacks of these these jellyfish. What I want to do today is spend a little bit of time going through what we know and what some of the first aid remedies are. Because interestingly, the first aid is one of those things that's chopped and changed for jellies for an extended period of time. And it'd be good to get to the bottom of that. I've printed out a few papers that I want to sit down and have a good read of in the next little while to try and sort of get my head around it, because it is a bit wishy-washy, which is kind of surprising for something that is so so regularly encountered. But I'll get into some of the details of that a bit later on. Firstly, in around Christmas time, so only a few weeks back really, in Christmas time last year, thousands of bluebottles started washing up on the shore across many Victorian beaches. Now, some of you, our listeners may know the bluebottle. Certainly, if you're like myself from personal experience, they do hurt. But the Portuguese man of war, or bluebottle, is one of these critters. It's actually what's known as a siphonophore. It's not a true jellyfish. It's quite incredible to think about. But it's a colony of all these organisms and critters that get together. So one will form the gas float. The animal, for those who aren't aware, floats at the surface and then has all these fishing tentacles dangling down from there. But in the Age newspaper, the surf lifesaver Henry Kiss was quoted as saying that in Portsea, they were getting any particular metre of shoreline, there were probably around 50 to 60 individuals. Now, it's always a wonderful thing in ecology to try to quantify the levels. You know, if you say there's heaps of jellyfish, that's not really terribly illustrative of what's going on. 50 to 60 per metre of shoreline, those are extremely high densities, and that's the sort of thing that'll cause beaches to be closed. Happened twice in the space of 1 week, thereabouts, and tends to happen on the Mornington Peninsula every 3 or 4 years or so. It has been a bit over, we're getting this situation where bluebottles have been reported washing up all along Victoria's coastline this summer. Reports of high numbers from Wonthaggi right through to Warrnambool, in particular beaches in Melbourne southeast seem to be most affected. So Frankston along the Mornington Peninsula have been some particular hotspots. But the bluebottles, it's interesting, they tend to live out in these vast patches out in the middle of the Tasman Sea, somewhere between Australia and New Zealand. It's quite remarkable to see such high numbers emerging in Port Phillip Bay. Because they live out in the Tasman, it's really the wind that pushes them along. So it's almost like imagining a giant broom or something sweeping all these bluebottles through from the Tasman Sea into Bass Strait, and then more winds cooperating to try and shunt them through the heads. And once they're through the heads, then you need winds of the southerlies, which you often get, and that channels them right up towards the northern sector of Port Phillip Bay. I remember we got some back in about 2016, it was. They showed up and joined us for the Great Victorian Fish Count at Point Cook Marine Sanctuary. But they aren't. They weren't in massive densities by any stretch of the imagination right then. So it's a bit of a fluke for them to end up getting into Port Phillip Bay in such huge numbers. They generally don't tend to bother us too much. It's quite often lion's mane jellies, which I'll speak about a bit later. And then there's a bunch of other ones that sometimes do form pretty dense swarms and smacks. The blue blubber jellyfish is one. And then there's the more curious ones, Haeckel's jellyfish and a few other things that you'll see in decent numbers from time to time. Not huge aggregations or anything like that. But they're not renowned as being terribly potent stingers. That's the other thing. The blue bottles tend to they take the cake in terms of stinging power. They really hit pretty hard. Important to remember that they're generally not life-threatening. The ones that we get are basically not life-threatening. Some parts of the Caribbean, the Portuguese man of war, are slightly different species. They have caused situations where people have in fact died after getting tangled up in a lot of stinging tentacle. You need a big venom load to do something like that and kick off a systemic reaction. But that's generally not something that happens. We don't get fatalities from Physalia utriculus and some of these other species that have been identified occurring in Port Phillip Bay, which is a very good thing. They're nothing like the potency of the jellyfish species that we find up north. The Irukandjis, which are a real problem because they're such a small little critter, and the great big box jellyfish, which is surely one of the most venomous animals on the planet. It can certainly kill people outright. and not through anaphylactic reactions and things. It's just the systemic reaction of the venom infiltrating the person, basically. So the blue bottles, they won't swim. Like I said, they've got that float. They're at the mercy of the winds, the tides and the currents. Instantly recognisable by that gas-filled float. The technical name for that is pneumatophore. And they're generally between about 1 centimetre up to about, a big one would be 15 centimetres in length. And that's more the open ocean ones that you see that tend to be that very, very large size. Functions just like a sail. So without the means of propulsion, the blue bottles rely on that gas-filled float to get them around. It's quite ingenious that they've got the float, and then they're either a left or right-handed jellyfish, so to speak, based on where their tentacles are in relation to the float. Some they're on the left, some they're on the right. The thing with that is that the half of the population will therefore have a left-facing sail, others will have a right-facing sail. So what that means is when there's strong winds blowing in a particular direction, it doesn't strand the entire mass of blue bottles up on the beach. 50% will go one way, 50% will go the other. So that's basically how that works. Once the blue bottles do come into shore and strand, doesn't take long for them to leave again en masse. So what we found is the beaches around the Mornington Peninsula cleared pretty quickly when the northeasterly winds kicked in. They'll be blown back offshore. I remember back in my younger sort of formative days, and this was when I had a strong inkling for the marine biology side of things, going up to my grandparents' house on the Gold Coast in Queensland at a location called Palm Beach. As kids, we always dreaded the northeasterly winds because we knew in that part of the world when the northeasterlies blew, then there were heaps of blue bottles coming into the beach, and there was nothing more frustrating and dispiriting. You've got a brilliant day, bright sunshine, bodyboard and the bathers sitting idle in the garage while the beach becomes temporarily unavailable. And it used to be terrible. I remember walking outside and thinking, oh, Dad looking at it and going, oh, geez, guys, I think it might be a northeasterly wind today. Yep, it's definitely a northeaster blowing. And we'd go down and we'd find blue bottles all over the place, washed up on the shore. If they were washed up on the shore, that meant that they were in the water. And for those who haven't been stung, I remember back in secondary school, there was the technology shed, the tech shed where we do woodwork and all sorts of gadgets and gizmos around the place for making stuff. And there'd be this little hot wire that we'd use to shape and bend plastic. So you'd take a strip of plastic, you'd pop it over the hot wire. The intense heat from the wire would cause the plastic to become quite soft, and you'd bend the plastic into the shape you wanted. So you want to take this little bit of plastic, turn it into a 90 degree angle, you'd hold it firmly over the hot wire, angle it, pull it across and hold it in the position, take it away from the wire, and Bob's your uncle. You've got that hot that hot wire's worked its magic and bent the plastic for you. It feels like that hot wire, that thin strand of wire being draped around whatever area is getting stung. So the worst sting that I had, I vividly remember, I was on a bodyboard and I was just using a t-shirt to keep the sun off me. And what happened, it was a loose-fitting T-shirt. Unfortunately, the stinging tentacle of this blue bottle basically ended up wrapping almost around my neck, and then it fed down through the T-shirt and popped out the sleeve. So the T-shirt was kind of holding it in place. And, of course, it was excruciating pain. It really stung like hell for a while there. I'm pulling it off with my fingers. That's not what you're supposed to do, but let's face it, in a crisis, that's exactly what you're going to do. Got the strand off, and in doing so, you're moving it and so on, you're getting more and more and more stung. Lots of those nematocysts, those stinging cells firing and pumping venom in. So it was a very, very painful sort of experience. One of the worst jellyfish stings I've had for sure. The other one being when I accidentally headbutted a blue blubber jellyfish, turned blind into it this is in the days before I had a hood, and got this really painful sting across my forehead. That was one thing. It was very similar pain to the blue bottle, and I think it was mainly because of the area affected. It was what started to scare me a bit was when I started swimming back to shore, thinking, all right, I've got to get out and get some, whether it be ice or a hot, some warm water or something on it. I'm swimming back towards the beach and I'm feeling this intense pain in my neck, and I'm guessing it was the lymph node suddenly dealing with the big influx of toxin. And it hurt like hell. It felt like someone had grabbed multi-grip pliers and was squeezing my neck. And I remember my jaw locking. It was almost like that lock jaw sensation you get with tetanus. Nowhere near as severe, of course, but it hurt like hell, and it really had me quite worried. So it's one of those things that you've got to really be quite aware of. Nowadays, I wear a 7mm dive suit in the water, and what that means is I'm basically not exposed to any of the stings. I've got the 7mm dive suit, the hood. The one area that's not protected, of course, is my face, and it was only a couple of weeks ago that I was in the water. I got what's called a hot water sting, which is where you get the tiny fragment of the, for those who haven't seen them, lion's mane jellies in Port Phillip Bay. They're a very bright red colour, immediately distinguishable by this brilliant bright red colour of the bell. And they have these ultra fine, delicate tentacles hanging down that they use to snare fish and zooplankton and all these sort of things that they munch on. And those fine tentacles are very prone to breaking up, and you get a tiny little fragment of tentacle drifting through the water, and it encounters something and stings the hell out of it. And I got a sting on the lip this just the other day. No first aid required, very brief sensation of pain. And that was the part of my mouth that was around the snorkel. Of course, the lips are exposed, got stung. No first aid required, nothing like that. But it is, it certainly smarts, and you know when you've been, done. That little fragment, like I said, of tentacle, we call hot water. That's the sort of colloquial name for it. All right, we might break things up a bit here. I'll go to a song. This one is To Look At You by INXS.
heard stories straight from community, culture, language, music, and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows, and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet, or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, 8:55 AM. As we get towards the end of another show, one thing I want to point out about jellies, of course, stings, prevention is much better than cure. So you don't need a wetsuit. Any sort of barrier will work quite well. Now, up in the tropics where they do box jellyfish research, pantyhose is more than enough to stop you getting stung. So things like a basic rashie, board shorts, all those sorts of things will generally work extremely well at preventing you from getting stung in the first place. So definitely avoid touching them or coming into contact with them. Be careful if your dog's sniffing around on the beach. If their sensitive noses happen to touch a jelly tentacle, you can expect them to be in a lot of pain. Likewise, don't touch even a jelly that's washed up on the shore and dehydrated. The stinging cells are more than likely to still be quite potent. But when you do, if the worst does happen and you do get stung, get out of the water as quickly as possible. Remain calm. Only around 1% of reported stings require intervention from paramedics. Having said that, some of the more intense reactions can involve cramping and involuntary clenching of muscles. So that makes getting back to shore quite tricky in the first place. So try to remain calm, get back into shore. And then what you're looking to do is effectively, for years, people had thought that urinating was the way to go, urinating on the sting. You don't need to do that. Vinegar. Jury's out on that one. Not terribly good for bluebottle stings. Interestingly, for the lion's manes in the British Isles, there is some word that the vinegar might actually be quite effective. But remove tentacles, preferably with tweezers without using your bare hands. Don't touch your eyes, for God's sake. Make sure that you you thoroughly wash your hands before doing anything else. Wash the sting area with seawater to remove any remaining stinging cells. Place the sting in hot water, so the area there in hot water no longer than the injured person can tolerate, and obviously so that it will not scald for at least 30 minutes. If a heat pack isn't available or if hot water isn't available, run with an ice pack, and that's basically what you'll need. Anyway, that brings us to the end of yet another episode of Out of the Blue. Stay tuned for Out of the Pan with Sally up next, and enjoy your public holiday for Australia Day or however you choose to celebrate, commemorate or commiserate it tomorrow, and we'll hear from us next time. Uganda is kito fushikure datta.
Listening to 3CR Community Radio.